Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them, and not necessarily those of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening once again, and welcome to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And she is the always lovely. She is the mystical. She is the mysterious. And she is Lynn Nickerson.
I thought you forgot my name there for a minute.
Nope, I'm going to do that to you one of these nights just to see what you say.
You recognize me, but you forgot my name, I know.
Yeah, that's right. I had to look over and see who was sitting there. Oh, yeah, it's her. Okay.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Hey, you know.
Nice day.
The weather is taking a turn for the better.
Yeah, maybe no more
still,
snow.
It's got a long way to go, but hey, we're
we'll
on the right
it.
Track.
Yep.
All right. So, we got a good show tonight. So why don't we get right into it?
I think it's a good idea.
No, sound good to you?
Maybe okay. You'd like to introduce him.
I'm going to do that tonight on Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. As one of the nation's oldest cities, Boston certainly has its share of ghost stories. From the ghost of Dr. Thaddeus Mason Harris at the Athenaeum to the spirits who roam Boston Common at night. And nobody knows these supernatural tales better than tonight's guest, Sam Beltrusis, author of many books on the hauntings of Boston, Cambridge, and other Massachusetts towns. Sam is also a freelance writer for various publications, and he is the producer of the upcoming Provincetown Parafest, which is coming up in May, and he is going to tell us about that later. Sam has been featured as Boston's paranormal expert on Biography Channel's Haunted Encounters. He hosts... I lost my place.
Something about some haunted tours.
He hosts the weekly 13 Most Haunted radio show on Boston Free Radio. And Sam also moonlights as a tour guide, and he is the founder of Boston Haunts Tour. Yeah. Boston Haunts Ghost Tours.
Haunted Boston Tours.
Well, we'll get the right story. We'll get the right
story.
Yeah, we'll do that. So, welcome tonight to Spirit Radio, Sam Beltrusis. Good evening, Sam. How are you?
Hi, Sam.
Hey, Willie. Hi, Len.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome to the show. It's nice to have you on.
So, what are the name of the tours? You started with Haunted Boston Tours and then developed Cambridge Ghost.
Yeah, so I started off my tours now, the tour in Boston is called Boston Haunts. My first tour that I ran myself was in Harvard Square in Cambridge, and and I also give tours in Salem. So I've done three tours, and then I produced a tour in Provincetown, which turned into my book, Paranormal Provincetown, during the summer. And that was sort of the precursor to the Provincetown Paracon that you mentioned in the intro.
And how many books do you have out now, Sam? I counted, I think it was 10. Or not.
Yeah.
10?
No, 7.
Oh, 7.
Seven.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I thought I counted 10 on Amazon. I was never very good at math.
Let's see what I have to put up with. But, Sam, so this paranormal stuff, this kind of started when you were younger, and you started seeing your grandfather after he passed, and you were quite young then. Would you like to tell us about that?
Yeah, that you read my book. That's good. No one asked me about that. You know, when I was a kid, I was kind of like the kid from The Shining. I was just like a freakish kid, and my grandfather died when I was really young, and I was spiritually connected to him, and I saw him. He appeared. And he still comes to me in my dreams, and
wow.
I remember telling my mom, and my mom, she had a similar experience, so she didn't think I was crazy. And it's just something that I feel his warmth with me. And she said she recalled her experience with my grandfather as well, where she felt his hand touch her hand after he passed. And she was too scared for him to manifest. And so she was, I guess, glad that I had that experience, but she was also kind of freaked out by the idea as well.
It can be unnerving when it's a loved one like that. It's just, It's hard to deal with, don't you think?
Sam? Oh, yeah. Oh. I mean, I didn't, when I was young, I didn't really know the difference. I didn't really know that was kind of weird. And as I got older, I became more terrified because I had multiple encounters, but I would have experiences that were kind of freakish for me. And I put on what I call paranormal blinders for many years. And I would have experiences like walking by, I was in New York City for about 10 years, and walking by Washington Square Park, and I felt like a hand grab my leg.
Wow.
And I was like, what's going on? And it turns out that's where, it was a mass grave in Washington Square Park.
Really?
So I had those encounters over and over again, and then not until I moved back to Boston in 2007, I started writing articles on the paranormal, and that led to my book deals, and then it just kind of opened up a whole world for me.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, the stories of all these restless spirits are really fascinating because, the stuff that you've written about, it's a piece of Americana. But what I want to point out again to our audience, and I've already made a mention to this on the internet for the intro for tonight's show, is that those who came here because of religious persecution from England, they turned around in their puritanical way and started persecuting others. And because of that, out of that came an awful lot of tortured souls. And this is what you write about. And it's very sad, but it's also interesting to see the background, to see how the nation developed and under what conditions. So what seems to be probably the most common type of haunting story that you cover is burial grounds or mass burial grounds where they didn't know there were any people there. So I wanted to start with maybe the Boston Common Central Burying Ground and some of the episodes that happened there.
Yeah, so that's where it all started for me. It's the Boston Common. And I did, like you mentioned, I was a tour guide with Haunted Boston first. And then I launched my own tours the season after. But Central Burying Ground was where I was going to feature in the article that I wrote for Stuff Magazine. And there were reports of a potential that was haunted. And it was sort of like the no-name cemetery where no one else, the big names were not buried there, like John Hancock and Paul Revere. And so I went there and I saw an outline of what looked like a girl.
Oh.
And I was with my assistant, and he was like, "Sam, that's just fog." And then I jumped over the fence to get closer, and then she disappeared. And I didn't know the whole backstory. There have been multiple reports of a ghost girl in the Central Burying Ground, and so that kind of opened up a whole world for me with people telling similar stories. And there was also a reported story in the 1970s. With a Dr. Matthew Rucker, who he was in the cemetery. He was doing etchings on the gravestones, which is not you know, not allowed. Mm-hmm. And now it's not. And he felt a tap on the back of his shoulder. He looked around. No one was there. Then he felt another tap on the back of his shoulder. And he looked around. He saw a girl. According to his report, the girl was between 12 and 14. And according to him, had the saddest eyes he's ever seen. Oh. So he was trying to escape from the situation. He was terrified. And this is the scary part. So when he was looking for his car keys, he couldn't find them. And then he felt an icy cold hand go inside his pocket, pull out the keys, and he saw the keys levitate in front of him.
Oh, that is really creepy.
It certainly is.
This is what we tell in our ghost tour. And so the keys levitate before him. They dropped, and he goes to the police station, and they were like, "You saw a what? You saw a ghost?" And
excuse me.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also, that was the combat zone back in the day, so that was not a good part of town. They were probably thinking perhaps he was drinking or, you know, that sort of thing. And so he came back, and it turns out that supposedly it's the mass grave. There's a lot of mass graves in the Central Burying Ground. A lot of the undesirables were dumped there.
Yeah, and, Papa Graves.
There was a mass grave for the lost souls from Deer Island. Deer Island is in my current book, which is Haunted Boston Harbor.
Sam?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if you dropped off or not.
We thought we lost you.
So that really creeped out. That creeped out Dr. Rutger, didn't it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. And that's like the one of the legends that is part of the lore. But people have multiple similar reports on the ghost tours. You hear people, you're getting tapped in the back of their shoulder. We have photos even over the years of what looked like a girl kind of looking, wearing colonial garb and looking at gravestones. So, you know, that I haven't experienced her in a while because I haven't spent a lot of time there recently. I've been working on other books, but she's sort of like my favorite ghost to talk about. She's like one of the, she started it all basically.
Oh, do you know anything more about her? She's in Puritan clothes.
Yeah, well, not she's old school clothes. So we think this girl, this is a legend. The girl was one of the people that died on Deer Island, and Deer Island is in Boston Harbor, and a lot of the Irish immigrants came in, and there was like a tuberculosis clinic on that island for a while, there was a mass grave for those who died from tuberculosis. So perhaps she was one of those victims. So we think maybe she's from not the 1600s, but from the 1800s.
So was it that they couldn't bury those people out on Deer Island, so they brought them ashore?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely Deer Island had massive graves. So there were a lot of people that died from, you know, if they were coming to America, they had tuberculosis, other ailments, and there was many Irish Americans that died, and there was also a Native American massacre on Deer Island as well. So there was a Native American burial ground on Deer Island too.
Have you been to Deer Island yourself?
Yeah, I have. It's now the Deer Island Sewage Treatment Facility. I gave tours in Boston Harbor for about 5 months on a boat going to George's Island, so I would pass by it every day.
Oh my, did the place creep you out? Did you feel there was a lot of energy there?
Yeah, I mean, anything Native related, I pick up on it. My grandfather is Native, and anything with a Native, they called it Devil's Island, and you know what they did to those Native Americans was horrific.
What
they
tribe?
They put them on Deer Island, kind of with no shelter and no. You know, like no means of survival. And there were hundreds of them, and they were called praying Indians, praying as the sense that they converted to Christianity and put on the island first. It was a mass genocide. So they all died on that island.
And what tribe do you know?
It was the Natick. They were from Natick, and they converted to Christianity.
Oh, that is really sad. Okay, well, getting back to the main shore then, there was, of course, the elm tree, the hanging tree there in the commons, and that is down now, but people see a lot of stuff there too, don't they?
Yeah, so that's the spot. It's in the middle of Boston Common. And, you know, Boston Common was a mass grave site, so people for many years in the 1600s, 1700s would bury their loved ones in the Boston Common because it was mainly for sheep grazing, so it was an open field. And the hanging tree was in the middle of Boston Common, and people were executed for all sorts of things, including witchcraft.
Yeah. Very sad. I know people have seen...
Do you have any idea how many people were hung on that tree, the hanging tree?
Yeah. But with that, I would say under 100. There was also there was three women that were accused of witchcraft and were hanged there. And then there was also the Quakers, but the Quakers were hanged in a different location.
Hmm.
Like Mary Dyer, for example, she was hanged in a different location, but yeah, there were people that were executed for all sorts of crimes, ranging from, gossip and, like one gentleman supposedly stole a squirrel. So the Puritans were known for if they didn't like you, they would find a way to execute you.
To persecute you and execute you. Unbelievable. There's also the little tobacco shop that was across the street that Leslie Rule wrote about, and the rattling chains in the basement.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the area that's close to Central Burying Ground, and there was definitely a lot of witch related stuff. Like there was, Salem is known for the witch city, but Boston had women who were executed for witchcraft too.
Earlier too.
This is before the witch trials of 1692.
Right. And so it's believed that woman in the basement that rattles the chain, she was probably a witch that had been shackled, right?
Well, yeah, I mean that's a theory.
Sad.
And like they were actually not kept. The prison was actually closer to School Street. It's closer to the beginning of my ghost tour, which is Washington Street and School Street. But yeah, I mean that's what people think.
Mm. And there's one other location there that's close to the Commons that I wanted to touch on before we move on to another area. But the Cheers Pub that was sort of called after the show, the Hampshire House is above that, right?
Right.
Okay.
And this is from my book from like 6 years ago, so I have to kind of go back from the book. But yeah, it is above that. And there that was my first book that I wrote, Ghosts mm-hmm. of Boston. And that location, there was supposedly a ghost girl, and that space is rented out and for like private functions. And there's reports of a ghost girl in that location.
Okay, and that has to do with Judge Bayard Thayer, and there was some suspicion as to how this young girl died. Apparently she was one of his daughters, and she was a twin.
Yeah. That was my first book, and you touched on the one story that I regret writing.
Oh, really?
I've written seven books. But yeah, that story, that's lore, and it's unsubstantiated.
Oh.
But yeah, that was what people had told me. But there was no, we went back to the records, and there was no proof that he had a twin.
But still there was a ghost girl there.
Yeah, I don't know the whole backstory, but yeah, my assistant and I kind of fought over that story because the legend is that there was a twin, like an illegitimate twin that lived there. And I was reporting on what people told me because I'm a journalist. I'm not, I approach my stories. If someone tells me a story, I'm going to view it as that's what they believe. So
mm-hmm.
When I write my books, I interview people, and if they tell me these stories, I try my best to substantiate it as much as possible.
Yeah, but then again, they're telling you what they feel.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And
it's a fine line.
Subjective.
Yeah, truly.
Okay. Well, before we leave the common completely, mm-hmm. there's another very interesting story in the Boylston Street Tea Station.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. Oh,
okay, which also was a mass burial ground. The Redcoat, who is still wandering the tracks.
Yeah, so that story, I when I was on Haunted Encounters, we were right in front of the Boylston Street Tea Station and the Central Burying Ground. And the subway system is really interesting because there's a lot of ghost tunnels. So tunnels have not been used for 50, 60 years. The Boylston Street Tea Station is extremely old. It's one of the oldest in the country, if not the oldest. And there was when they were doing excavations in the late 1800s for the Boylston Street T-stop, they uncovered bodies, massive bodies. They found, I forget the exact numbers, but they found like close to 1,000 soldiers buried in on top of each other. And what's weird about it is they were in oddly good condition.
Really?
And
that is odd.
They were from the Battle of Bunker Hill, and as you know, Bunker Hill was actually Breed's Hill, but they were put in. And what was interesting about the bodies is they were missing arms and legs. Ooh. And the reason why they were missing arms and legs is because this is pre-sterilization, so they all had gangrene. And so they were missing arms and legs because of amputation. Oh. And so with that said, there is a residual haunting, supposedly, in the tunnels below.
Wow.
The subway.
So why do you suppose the redcoat is there, guarding the graves?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the belief is. I mean, so those were all British soldiers. The redcoats were British soldiers, or the regulars, as they actually were called. And they were buried in this mass grave. And perhaps the story is that in one of the ghost tunnels, that a residual haunting appears, and then the T driver passed, because it's on the T track right beneath the Boylston Street T stop, and he appears, and then the newbie T driver puts on his brakes because he's not sure what's going on, but the old school guy, you know, knows about it, and
cruel.
It's kind of like a residual haunting that's appeared over and over again. But when I was on the show about 3 years ago, they did go down in the tunnels to actually check it out. They did not uncover anything.
Hmm. Well, you can't make them appear at will.
Legend.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of this stuff is. It's often hard to verify. Sometimes you just have to go on personal experiences and what people feel. How about the campus haunts? There are a lot of buildings that are like old brownstone and granite buildings that are used as dormitories that a lot of students in various colleges and schools are using,
right?
And they have a lot of experiences. And one of my favorite ones, particularly because of the look of the building, is Charles Gate. That has the most ominous, bizarre architecture.
That is
quite
a building.
Charles Gate?
Yes, Charles Gate.
Yeah. So when I went to BU years ago, and
did you?
And so Charles Gate was a dorm that was close by. It was an Emerson dorm at the time when I was in college, and. The story is, I was able, back 7 years ago when I wrote the book, like I was initially writing the book, I went back to the files in Emerson. I was able to uncover a file of information from the students who were staying in a dorm. And that that location, there was all sorts of crazy stories, and a lot of it was, you know, Emerson students, you know, that were having encounters, and they would kind of write a diary about their ghostly encounters. There was a Ouija board story that they supposedly opened a portal in Charles Gate. Now, Charles Gate is a luxury condo, they're luxury condos now, and I have not heard any stories recently, but I do think that when this happened, when the Ouija board story broke, everyone was talking about it. So it was like the most haunted location. It was a flop house for many years well. And there was potential mafioso ties to that building.
It's just such a striking building. The architecture is just beautiful.
It's really beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I remember it back in the 90s and looking at it now versus then. They've done an amazing job with the restoration.
Really? Did they kind of maintain the integrity of the place without ripping it apart inside?
Well, they maintain the facade of the place, but yeah, I mean, like the structure and the gilded aspects of it, they've maintained that.
I guess that's going to happen anyway, huh?
Yeah.
How about some of the other ones in the area that you wrote about? Let me see before we get on there. Well, how about the Omni Parker House? I found that immensely interesting.
Yeah, so Parker House, you know, again, these are all stories from my first book. Parker House is also where it all started for me as well. And I, you know, the legend, the story is that Harvey Parker himself is the one who haunts the Parker House. And There's a story. There's a Charles Dickens mirror that's on the mezzanine level of the Parker House, and I was standing in front of it. And the legend is, if you say Charles Dickens, Charles Dickens, Charles Dickens three times, something weird will happen. Now, I kind of like, you know, like whatever. But the thing is that this mirror was actually pulled from Charles Dickens' room. And Charles Dickens loved Boston. So he stayed here twice. In fact, he was doing a Christmas Carol, a sort of like a theatrical experience in Boston right before his death. Mm. And so he would read a Christmas Carol multiple times in front of that mirror. And it said that he has psychically, like, it's become enchanted because of the amount of time he spent in front of that mirror.
So yeah, there was a picture in the book of you standing in front of the mirror. You had your back to it. But did you have any experiences, Sam?
Yeah. So in the book, I was standing there with my photographer, and I'm like, Charles Dickens, Charles Dickens, Charles Dickens. And there was condensation on the mirror behind me as if someone was breathing, inhaling and exhaling. And my photographer was like, Sam, look behind you. And it was totally freaky. And I would also, when I would do my tours, now I don't give the tour as much as I have people who do give the tours for me. So I'm not, because I'm working at other locations now.
Oh.
But for years, that was a surefire spot for potential hauntings. We saw shadow figures and all sorts of things in that mirror.
Do you often see things when you're on your tours?
Yeah, I mean, I generally have people who give the tours. The tours that I gave last season were in Salem, and so Salem, of course, it was crazy land. One report after another. But the Boston tour, definitely. I mean, people, all sorts of things, getting touched. I think that the Boston ghosts are, it's more of a history tour and less of a ghost tour. The Salem tour is definitely, there's a lot of ghost lore with Salem.
Okay. Your latest book, then, is that The 13 Haunts?
Yeah, so I had three that came out last year. So I had Haunted Boston Harbor with the History Press that came out, and that's from spending about 6 months in the Boston Harbor giving tours. I also had 13 Most Haunted Crime Scenes, and then I also had Paranormal Provincetown that came out last year. So I wrote three books that were published last year.
Wow.
And I'm already working on my next set of books too. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Once I the Boston book was my first one, and I've learned a lot since that first book. The first one was written as someone who was just getting into it,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like my books have definitely improved over the 7 years, and I'm proud of that improvement.
Well, I'll tell you, the information, you've done a very good job. The information is really fascinating
and
in all of them.
You should be proud of the Boston book, too. It's a very, very good book. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah,
it
opened all the doors for me, and it led to, like, my bestseller is Salem, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. I imagine that is an attraction.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Well, we weren't aware. Well, we were planning on focusing on Ghosts of Boston and Ghosts of Cambridge. So Willie and I both read those two books. So we'll just have to focus more next time on some of your other ones.
We would like to talk about a couple of places in your 13 Most Haunted, though.
Yeah, well, I guess we can get to that in the second half of the hour, maybe.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Okay, because there was maybe one more that I wanted to bring up before we get into that. So we're going to take a break, Sam. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. So if you can hang on, and we'll be back soon. Thank you.
And Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. And Lynn, I guess we have a couple of guests coming up.
Our upcoming guest list, we are welcoming Nick Parisi, and he's working with it's a Twilight Zone Museum in New York, and he's gathering all of the paraphernalia from Twilight Zone shows. He's working on all of the scripts to make them available to the public, and he knows about all of the backstories of how the stories developed, who wrote the scripts, and the strange things that happened. So that should be an interesting show, too. It's a little known information, some of it. And Nick will be followed by Tom D'Agostino. Tom and Arlene have written a whole bunch of books, about 13, on haunted ghost towns and ghosts across New England. So I'm not sure which book we're going to focus on with them, but they're going to be our guests in a couple of weeks. So that about wraps up our guest list.
Okay. Well, very good. Let's go back to the phone for tonight's guest, Sam Beltrusis. Welcome back, Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Willie. Hey, Lynn.
Hi. Okay. Well, before we leave Haunted Boston, I wanted to touch on the Longfellow House, where Henry Wadsworth Longfellow lived with his wife. Well, his first wife died after miscarriage, and then he married Frances Appleton. And
yeah,
that's such a sad story. So you want to tell us about it? Do you remember it?
Yeah, it's so, because it's like yeah, trying to remember. But yeah, so when I went into the Longfellow House to do the research, I remember the emotion in that structure. It was so, you can feel it. You can feel the emotion still lingering there. Mm. The story with his wife was she was working, I think she was doing lockets of hair at the table. She had a candle. She lit herself on fire. Her husband, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, was asleep on the bed. He saw his wife engulfed in flames running across the parlor. He gets out of bed. He takes a rug and covers her, and she dies in that location. He had a scar on his chin, and that chin scar came from that horrific death. And you know, someone that's sensitive to the paranormal, you can feel it. You can feel the energy still in the house. And it's said that he was never the same after that.
Oh, I wouldn't think so. They had been married for like 18 years. They had 6 kids, and apparently they had a very good marriage. And that happened to her, and you lost her. It's really tragic. Yeah. So following that, I guess that he spoke with her and that he danced with her.
Yeah, according to his daughter, she said that he would have conversations with his wife after her death. Like, they wouldn't be dancing, and the daughter would spot them dancing. He would be, of course, dancing by himself. And, you know, perhaps it was, you know, just mourning the loss of his wonderful wife, or it could be in fact a ghost. I do believe that someone that love never dies, you know, and I think that the love for his wife still was there in the afterlife.
And how do you pronounce the name of that house? It's known as the Longfellow House, but it was Vassal Craigie. Was that the name of it?
I think so. It was also where George Washington was stationed before.
Right.
He was there before the Vassal Craigie House. And
Craigie,
there's a whole backstory to the house as well, going back to the Revolutionary War.
And there was a fire there, too. One of the back houses burnt, and someone thought he saw George Washington on a horse coming out of the flames of, what was it, a slave's quarter or something? That back house in the yard.
Yeah, I need to reread my book. Before. You're like pinpointing location. I'm like, I remember writing that like a long time ago.
No.
But there was a story. So there was an account of seeing George Washington. You know, the thing is, when I'm doing these books, also there are legends, and like there are actually printed accounts of people having ghostly encounters. And then in the spiritualism movement in the late 1800s, that era, like, it was kind of commonplace to kind of make up ghost stories.
Oh.
So it's really,
yeah.
So it's really hard to differentiate, like, whether or not it was a true encounter. But yeah, that story that was reported, and some gentleman did report seeing the ghost of George Washington.
Well, evidently, it's still kind of active. still have a lot of energy there, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Starting off with like Boston, I would say that the hauntings were more residual, and I think Cambridge, they're residual as well. So when I say it's a residual haunting, as in the energy's still there, it's like a psychic imprint on the location.
Yeah.
As I've moved on to my more recent books, like 13 Most Haunted, these locations are active and they're intelligent. It's
yeah.
a whole other world of paranormal that I've gotten into, and some of it can be really scary, you know?
Yeah.
So I miss the good old residual hauntings that I had.
Yeah. less aggressive.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe we can get into some of those. I know Willie wants to touch on a couple of them.
Well, yeah, we've stretched your memory enough now, I guess, Sam. So from the 13 Most Haunted, there are a couple of places that we want to talk about. One of them being the Houghton Mansion out in North Adams, Mass. And
right.
And actually, we had a text from a listener, Dennis from Fitchburg, Mass. And he wants to know if you think it was the accident with Houghton and the car that is causing the haunting out there.
The Houghton Mansion. There was a lot of death that happened in a really short period of time.
Right.
There was a tragic situation where Houghton's family perished in a carriage accident. I think they were heading to Vermont,
mm-hmm.
and it overturned. And their butler was the one that was the carriage driver.
Right.
He didn't die when the carriage overturned, but it did affect the entire family, including this gentleman. And the carriage driver committed suicide.
That's so sad.
Outside. Mr. Witters, yeah.
And, yeah, very tragic.
there was just a series of deaths, and they say that perhaps there was a curse on the house, on the Houghton Mansion. What's interesting about that location is that there were a lot of the boulders around that location in North Adams is pulled from the Bloody Pit, which was the Hoosick Tunnel. And I'm finding that a lot of the Bloody Pit is where there were multiple deaths inside the Hoosick Tunnel when they were trying to build a tunnel through this area. And they say that that's also very haunted too.
Yeah.
So I just found it interesting that those boulders came from the Hoosick Tunnel, which was nearby in the Berkshires.
Yeah, the boulders that they built the wall around the estate with.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that with the Houghton Mansion specifically, you talk to people who have investigated that location, say like 5-10 years ago, before it was on these pop culture TV shows.
Yeah.
And they said it's definitely more active now than it was, say, 5-10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Because of, perhaps the paranormal, because it's a hotbed for paranormal investigating. So perhaps a lot of that energy there are stowaways. So we're bringing our own energy into that location, which is exacerbating or stirring the pot at the Houghton Mansion.
Or just kind of amplifying it, you know?
Yeah.
I've investigated there myself several times, and I never felt anything dark there myself.
I don't think it's dark, but
there's constant. Yeah, there's constantly, you hear doors opening and closing when you know there isn't anybody there. I've gotten an EVP of the piano in the lodge.
That's
playing when there was nobody around. But you know who was the first, very first person to investigate the Houghton Mansion? You probably know
Ron
him.
Kulick?
Ron Kulick.
Yeah.
From New England Ghost Project.
Ron is the one that told me that. He was the one. He's like, Sam, I investigated that location, like, so I think he said 7 years ago. And now the energy is completely different. In fact, he's in my book with that quote.
Oh.
But he said, that it definitely has changed. And, it's been on all the shows. It's been on Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters.
Right.
And you see it, it's been opened up for investigation. So you have hundreds of people coming in with their energy, perhaps leaving that energy there or stirring it up. His theory was also that perhaps the ghosts hang out there for attention. So it may not be the ghosts that we think that are there. But he feels like that it has changed dramatically since his first investigation.
Mm. Yeah, they drop in to say hi. Some do have a tendency to come and drop in when there's a lot of energy there.
Yeah, well, they think there's something going on, and we don't want to miss it. So
yeah, they don't want to miss it.
Why don't we drop in there and see? So it's a very interesting place, anyway.
Yeah, very active.
When I was writing my book to do the story, I was meeting up with Joni Mahan.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a huge storm, so we had to drive through the mountains to get there. And it was like this huge, like torrential, rain squall happening.
Wow.
It wasn't a nor'easter; it was during the summer. But I was very grateful to be able to. One of my author photos is in front of the mountains in the Berkshires, like right after that investigation. And I was so relieved in that photo because we were driving into really bad weather to get to the Houghton Mansion. So I was glad that I survived.
Sam, so your work, you freelance pretty much, right? So you have a lot of time to go on these different investigations and the tours?
Yeah, so I have... pretty much full force put all my energy into the paranormal. I mean, like I do freelance. I do a TV show called What's New Massachusetts. I also work for public access. I've done multiple jobs at public access. I'm on the board of directors at in Somerville. I also work for Malden Access TV for 3 years. So I do teach, and I usually teach at public access stations because I feel like that's a great way to engage with the community.
Oh, sure.
Mm, yeah.
So, but the point is you don't have to go into an office 40 hours a week, right? Just
exactly,
your own?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a very nice schedule.
It is.
I like that.
The other place from Most 13 is your number one pick, the Victoria Mansion and Gardner. And then after that, we'll let you talk about the Parafest coming up. How's that?
That sounds cool, yeah. Okay. So you have the S.K. Pierce Victoria Mansion was number one, and this is based on input from multiple sources. I got a lot of flack for that ranking. A lot of people thought the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast in Fall River should have been the most haunted.
But
the S.K. Pierce Victoria Mansion is Joni Mahan wrote a book on it called Bones in the Basement.
Mm-hmm.
I had multiple dreams before coming into that house about that location. And
really?
I was told by psychics that whatever is there is going to take the breath out of me. And when I was there, I flipped out. They've done massive renovations to it. I've talked to the new owners, but I still am terrified of that location.
Truly, it really frightens you, huh?
Did it really frighten me? Yeah.
Yeah.
You've had experiences there yourself, right?
I did, but I didn't get too far. To actually, I was so freaked out.
Really?
when I was there, and I'm supposed to go back. I'm talking to multiple people. They're kind of easing me back into it. but my experience there was so freakish. In fact, I had someone on my radio show last night who had an encounter that was so over the top. You know, that he was on a ghost adventure recounting this and whatever it was. Hit him on the back. And so there have been reports of hitting and pushing and, all sorts of things.
Yeah, he got, hit in the back up in the bedroom, right? But then when he came downstairs, he got punched in the eye?
In the eye?
Yeah, it was this really a dramatic story of I didn't know that it was that dramatic. But, yeah, he got punched in the eye by the spirit. But he did play the spirit box session. And the session said he was doing and it's repeated in a sentence, which is rare, using an ovulus, and it said squeeze every throat in the house.
Oh my gosh!
And he played it for me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like that that is I've never heard that before in an ovulus session, and it just freaks me out because that's exactly what was told to me as well, that it was whatever is there is going to take the breath out of me.
A lot of people, I guess, claim that they feel like they can't breathe, And I was listening to your show last night, and his theory that maybe that was because of Eno Ceres.
Yeah, I mean,
who supposedly was spontaneous human combustion.
And that's not true. That's what people say would happen, but that's not what really happened. He was in his bed, and he was drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes. And this is coming from Joni Mahan, who wrote the really awesome book on the Escapist Victorian Mansion after spending, you know, years there. But I'm also learning that the history. I'm talking to the new owners, and they're doing some history investigation themselves. So there may be some updated history on the S.K. Pierce Victorian Mansion coming soon.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
But Sam, if you can tell us real briefly, what kinds of dreams were you having before you went there?
Yeah, so the dreams, my spirit interaction, and this goes back to my grandfather, comes to me in dreams. So I had a dream, and I didn't even know. I was so focused on Boston and Cambridge and Salem that I didn't even know about this location. I didn't even pay attention to, like, the Houghton Mansion or the S.K. Pierce Victorian Mansion. And I had a dream of a woman in the second floor. You could see her silhouette. She had kind of like a schoolmarm look to her, like she was like a nanny. Mm-hmm. And she was summoning me to the house. She wanted me to come to the house. Like, she was like, there was something horrible happened here. I want you to come. And she was singing this like Irish song. And this is in my dream. And uh-huh. I would have it multiple nights. And then I saw a friend who posted online that they were investigating at that house. And I was like, oh my God, that's the house from my dreams. And she was saying, confess to, there was a guy that was in this dream. A guy was crouching beneath her, and she was telling the guy to confess. And I don't know what he was supposed to confess, but that's what was in my dream. So something happened there that someone had to confess to.
Okay, so when you were having this dream, were you aware that it was that mansion?
No. I mean, I had it multiple times, and it would progress throughout. Like, it would get more and more terrifying as it progressed. And then my friend posted online a picture of the house. I'm like, oh my God, that's the house in the dream.
Oh my gosh!
So I definitely think that it just led to it, and it fits in perfectly with what was going on.
I was wondering how you put it into context, and I can see now, because it things wind up being synchronistic. That's usually how you find out. So that's really neat that you got the confirmation, but I'm sorry I had such a creepy nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, I'm used to it now. I mean,
are you?
I mean, to a point where, like, I feel like the whatever was there, and I think it was the nanny, nanny Maddie Cornwell, I think she was calling me. And whatever was there was calling sensitives in the area, and other sensitives or empaths were called too, so I wasn't the only one.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. What are they doing now with the house? Are they turning it into a bed and breakfast, or are they keeping it for ghost investigations?
Well, I think they're doing a little bit of both. I mean, I know that the last I heard, and I haven't got a confirmation. It's been getting national press because of the restorations. But they're going to open it up to investigations. In fact, some of those investigations are coming up with people that I'm working with. But I'm not. I told my friends that I'm not going back there unless I'm there during the day. So
yeah, I wouldn't.
So I'm not going to. I would neither. An overnight investigation there because of my last experience there, but. They're opening up for investigations, and I think people can rent out the house, kind of like the Houghton Mansion.
Okay. And is it open yet? Are the renovations finished?
They're still steadily doing it. And in fact, the people that are working on the restorations, they invited me to come there, but they're still actively doing it. But the soonest investigation that I know of is in April. So they're very close.
Great.
I know it needed a lot of work.
It did need a lot of work.
It was in pretty bad shape.
Constant upkeep.
Yeah.
And Edwin and Lillian, the former owners, they really went through hell in there.
They did, and they tried to do all they could, and they hung on to it for so long.
They were such nice people, too.
Yeah.
You know, I met them a few times. But
well,
what are you going to do?
I know. So, Parafest.
Yeah. You want to tell us a little bit about the Parafest is coming up in Provincetown?
Sure, yeah. I wrote a book called Paranormal Provincetown. I did a ghost tour in Provincetown that, to be honest with you, kind of bombed because it didn't there's a large tourist population that goes to Provincetown, but they didn't go on my tour. So I was looking at possible locations. I actually was looking even at Portsmouth because I was there recently and fell in love with Portsmouth for a potential Paracon. And then I reached out to my friend Adam Berry, who's on Kindred Spirits and was on Ghost Hunters. He said, why don't you do it in Provincetown? And I made a few calls, and I was able to pull it together. So I'm doing that. It's May 12th through the 14th.
All right.
In April.
May.
Oh, in May. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, May 12th through 14th. And it's we have Adam Berry. We have Amy Bruni from Kindred Spirits. We have the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal coming from all the way from Kentucky with Dana and Greg and all sorts of people. John Brightman's going to be there. And then Tim Weisberg and Stephanie Burke from Sugi South Coast are going to be there as well.
So where can people get information on that, Sam?
Yeah, it's provincetownparacon.com.
Oh, okay.
All right. And that's, what is it, a three-day event, you said?
It's a three-day event. Yeah, it starts on May 12th, and then it's the investigation. There's a lecture series on Saturday, May 13th from 9 to 5, and then there's an investigation at the UU Meeting House, which is a never-been-investigated location at night on May 13th. And then Sunday is like a breakfast, sharing, kind of like sharing evidence-type breakfast.
Mm. Nice. That's kind of fun. Are there any other stories from 13 Haunts that you'd like to talk about tonight?
Well, I'm working on 13 Most Haunted Hotels or 13 Most Haunted Bed and Breakfast.
Oh.
And that's why I was in Portsmouth. And so I was wondering if you guys have any stories of haunted hotels in your area.
Well, they used to be the Size Inn, and it's now changed hands. But there have been some strange stories about the ice cube trays and the ice falling out of the ice machine and doors opening up on the second floor. But quite frankly, it's been a while since I've read about it.
It's now called Portsmouth Inn?
Where I was going to stay. It's like the Portsmouth Hotel.
Yeah, the Portsmouth Hotel, I think is the name of it. Yeah, it's a very beautiful building.
Yeah.
Nice and old. I think insurance owned it before. Somebody that was in insurance, so they had some money.
And yeah, I was out there January 1st, and it was freezing. But I fell in love with Portsmouth. I'm like, this is so beautiful.
Oh, it is. It's great.
Is. Yeah.
And I was not able to, because I was trying to book a room there because I heard it was haunted. But my goal is to come back soon so I can spend the night there and hopefully get some ghost stories.
Well, we'd love to have you come back. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And maybe one of these days you'll be able to be here on a Saturday night and you can come in the studio and talk to us.
Yeah, we'd love to have you come to the studio, Sam.
Yeah, the plan was to actually come in. And I was worried the weather was not so great this week. And today it was beautiful, right?
Yeah, it was gorgeous. Well, you know, we've got time for maybe one more quick story. And I was wondering, it was a really powerful story, I thought, the one about Mr. Parkman. The doctor, the retired doctor that got hit with a cane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's been the good old Dr. Parkman story. The story with that is he went to Harvard, and there was a John Webster who also went to Harvard as well. Mr. Parkman was a wealthy, he was a moneylender, so he was a doctor. He went to Harvard Medical School, Medical College. But he didn't become a doctor. He actually became like a wealthy landowner.
Oh.
And he would also lend money to the locals because he had a lot of money. And he lent his Harvard friend, who became a professor at Harvard, Dr. John Webster, some money. And Dr. Parkman was he was a tall gentleman. He was known for his rugged looks. He had a really large chin, according to reports. And he would walk around the Boston Common, used with his ledger, marking off, the money that he was making from the locals.
Oh,
so Dr. Webster was one of the men that borrowed money. He would not pay him back. And so Dr. Parkman made a call to Dr. Webster and asked for his money. And Dr. Webster took a cane and hit Dr. Parkman over the head, killed him with one whack to the back of his head. And he then that's not the macabre part. The macabre part is what he did with the body. He cut the body into pieces. He put that his chest inside of a tea chest. Oh. He also put tried to burn the remains. So it was a very bloody crime scene. But he was a doctor, so he did a fairly good job at hiding the evidence.
Didn't he also try to flush some of the body parts down the toilet?
Yeah. So in my book, I called it Phantom Flush.
That's a good name for it.
He tried to flush the remains in the toilet. And everyone kind of cracks up, but it's still really, it's a macabre story. And
very.
It was the crime of the century in Boston. And you were asking about the Great Elm and about people who were hanged there.
Uh-huh.
He was actually, Dr. Webster eventually did confess to the murder, and he was hanged in Boston Common at that hanging tree.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's an interesting tidbit. Oh, how macabre. That is just awful. Two doctors and one kills the other. I don't think Webster meant to kill Parkman, but that's what happened.
Yeah,
he was furious.
Well, he hit him over the head because I think that he was like a recluse and he didn't wasn't very social. So I think he kind of reacted in the spur of the moment, and that one blow to the head with the cane actually killed Dr. Parkman.
Oh, sad story. We are at the end of the show,
yes,
Sam.
We've run out of time, Sam. But
thank you so much.
Quickly, why don't you tell people where they can buy the books, give out your websites, and all that stuff?
So if you want to go to the Provincetown Paracon, it's provincetownparacon.com. 13mosthaunted.com is my 13 Most Haunted series, which is more of my personal stories with the paranormal. And then you can look on Amazon for all the books that we talked about tonight, like including Ghost of Boston, Ghost of Salem, Ghost of Cambridge, and then Haunted Boston Harbor on Amazon. They're in all of the bookstores throughout New England. They're very popular, and hopefully you can, check out a book or two, and hopefully we'll remember the story.
Wonderful. We'll do that. Thank you so much, Sam.
All right. Thank you, Sam. We'll have to have you come up here and join us in the studio one of these
days. I would love that. Yeah,
great.
That
would love
great.
It. Terrific. Well, you have a good night.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a good night, Sam.
All right. Good night.
Okay. And that is Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience. Craig Mosier with the Graveyard Shift is coming right up.
And everyone, thank you for listening.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test. It is what it is, and whatever. Time is still the infinite jest. The arrow flies when you dream. The hours tick away, the cells tick away. The watchmaker keeps to his schemes. The hours tick away, they tick away. The measure of a life is a measure of love and respect.